Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Hello, we're back in the Gaelic Football Show. It's myself, Shane Stilton. We're here live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, any way you like it. Joining me in studio this week is two-time All-Ireland finalist, four-time Connacht winner, in the Varley.
Four, yeah.
Yeah, no big deal.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Not bad, no, not bad. Good to be here.
Good stuff. Mayo started well, 3 wins from 3.
Yeah, it's an encouraging start for them. I suppose, Roscommon and Cavan, it's nice to start well, because the last few years it's been so up and down. Last year's Ken McLaughlin score against Donegal just to drag them to safety. It's nice to start off, and James will be able to blood a few newbies for the next four games.
And you're still playing with St. Vincent's as well. You played last weekend against Skerry's Harps.
Skerry's Harps, yeah. We had a decent victory, 7-point victory. So it's nice to get out again, get the cobwebs off, and dust yourself down and go again.
We might come back to that in a little while. But I saw an interesting tweet from Shane Smith. Now, he's a sports science qualification, Kilmacud Croke senior football coach and exercise professional as well, is what's written on his Twitter. Now, I don't know if he was talking about Kilmacud Crokes or who he was talking about, because he doesn't specify, but he said senior football team training since mid-January, haven't touched a ball yet, have done laps, 400 metre and 200 metre runs, played challenge recently, beaten well, cue more running, they weren't fit, in inverted commas. Football's expected to make a return sometime in late February. Players deserve better than this. Does this reflect modern club football?
I wouldn't last too long there now if that was the case. That's kind of 15 years old there now.
Doesn't sound like a current Dublin club.
No, definitely not. Any, we'd say from your own point of view, definitely not. We'd have maybe 15 minutes running towards the end of the session. Look at us all. It's a skill-based sport. You want to get as many touches of the ball as you can. So the first hour, you're talking a training session's going on for about 80 minutes between warm-up and everything. Last 15 minutes, that's when you're going to do your running, and that's when the dogging starts, but that's it.
What's the worst training session or training weekend you had with either club or county?
Probably we went over to Portugal in 2012 at Mayo. It was James's second year. It was nice. It was a 6-day training camp, and it wasn't even that much running. As in, it was two sessions a day, and you're just not used to it. You're literally going to bed after the morning session, 12 o'clock in the day, going for an hour's kip, and then you're off again at 2 or 3 o'clock for your second session, and it's just living for like a professional athlete for the 6 days. But you're just absolutely wrecked after the week. But again, you started to adapt towards the end of the week, and it was brilliant. But you're just knackered.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Is there any particular sort of moment that would have stood out? I remember, and this is club level, a club training session with Burris Ali. Oh, it must be like 15, 16 years ago, and we went down to a local horse track. So it was a sand horse track, and the railings the whole way around it, and just car lights lighting up the place. That was it, cool. And just lads getting sick everywhere. Yeah. Ran like that for you?
My own club, we'll say at the start, about 2004, I started playing senior football. You're talking, that was the beginning, the end of that. That was kind of the introduction for me into senior football. And, we had a sand pit at home in Gary Moore in my old club in Mayo. And literally, I remember the first couple of years we were going through that. It was about 40 metres of sand, and up and down is a bit of an incline in it as well. So that was torturous.
That must have been lovely, all right.
Yeah.
James Horan is back with Mayo. And you've played under him. You got to a couple of All-Ireland finals together. So clearly Mayo for Sam.
Oh, here we go. Mayo for Sam, yeah. No, in fairness to James, he'll set a stall out now this year, his first year back. Look at he'll develop what's there in the county. He's very good at developing young players, getting that belief into the young players coming up. And his first term with us, we lost a long for 2010. We had at a very low ebb when he first came in, and personally, from a player's point of view, everyone was at a low ebb thinking, geez, am I good enough? But James came in, And there wasn't a big turnover in players. It was just literally he brought in the mechanisms in terms of training, the nutrition, the guys around him, like Ed Cotlin, Colin in Cork. He'll kill me for saying Cotlin, but Kieran Shannon was there as well. He just brought in the boys to the support network around him, and he just brought in such a professionalism. And he doesn't get enough credit for his psychological, in terms of bringing that belief into a dressing room.
Did he do something particular for you?
Not really. It's just out in the training pitch, you could see his methods and the rationale, the reasoning behind he was doing everything. And that wasn't the case in years previous.
So you weren't just dogging around the field wondering, why am I doing this? Everything had a purpose.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he'd at the start of every training session, he'd outline what you're going to do. Literally a 5 minute, less than 5 minute team talk in the dressing room on the tactics, on the board basically, and basically bang, bang, bang. This is what we're going to do. And let's go.
Because there was a quote from Keith Higgins recently. It's the first time that Mayo have won the first three league games since 2006.
I know, yeah.
And even just from Horan's first his first tenure, I think Mayo have averaged like fourth, fifth, sixth position in the league. So this seems to be the first time that he's targeting the league. And there was a good quote from Keith Higgins, who played hurling during the league last year as well, which shouldn't be ignored.
Yeah.
He goes, a lot of the boys are back before Christmas for the first time in a long time. There's a bit of eagerness after the way last year finished.
Yeah.
We had such a long break. We are just eager to get back and playing games. Everybody's in a good frame of mind. Physically, everybody looks good out there.
Yeah. Well, it's a balance. Like, you go to the end of September or the middle of September for an All-Ireland final in 16-17, and then it's getting that balance right in terms of getting mentally, it's not even, you're getting your body right as well, but even from a mental point of view, you're trying to reset. And you want the 2 or 3 months just even away from the setup, because you're engrossed into it. It's 24/7. It's like a second job. And if you're coming back in November again after September, you're just like, oh, this is... And, November into June, the start of the championship, it's a long, long time. So it's getting that balance right. And Keith, they went out last year in the start of July, is it? So, they had the first time ever, you see the boys on Instagram, posting pics on holidays and things like that. And it was they lived their life for the first time, I'd say, in 6 or 7 years. So that bit of freshness is probably back in them, and it's a reset button they've probably pressed, and back before Christmas, absolutely, and they're in a right good position now for the league. So the next four games will, especially against the Dubs, now will tell a lot.
Yeah, so that game is coming up this weekend. But I heard about the, so he's trying to develop new players. We've seen plenty of players, Phil McDonough come in, Reap, players like that.
Yeah.
And even there was trial games before Christmas, and I believe that he had all the guys who were the frontline players that we know, they were playing those games as well, which again is significant.
Yeah.
He's letting everyone know, not just the new players, it's a blank slate for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. He used to have a saying, actually, if it was a close call between a younger guy and the older player, the younger guy will always get the benefit of the doubt.
Why?
I suppose that's just setting the tone, as in, like, it doesn't matter if you represent a Mayo for 6, 7, 8 years and you've had a good record with them. It's a new season. You can't rest on your laurels here, and you've got a new guy coming in biting at the bit to try and get that jersey off you. So it's both letting the new guy know, look, there's a chance here, and letting the old guy know, look at here, if you don't buck up, this guy's going to take your spot. And that breeds competition, and he'll have 25. What he's trying to do now is trying to get 25, 26 lads biting at the bit, get them blooded in as much game time as he can. So come championship, you'll have your AVBs and it'll be bloody carnage.
And is that the way he does? He doesn't just split it up into two even training matches. He has, there's the first 15, there's the second 15, and in training you want to be getting on that A team.
Yeah, down through the years I was on the B team the week before, and from my performance in the B, in the AVB, I've gotten onto the squad, onto the team, should I say. So
from the B team?
From the B team, yeah. From the B team. That's happened a couple of times, actually. But and that again, that sends out the message. Look, this game is very important. You can't rest on your laurels here. And look, that's not... You're going to have probably 10, 11 players that are, guaranteed their spots. And then the four, like in every county team, I would think, like four or five players that you're kind of, to-ing and throwing about, you know, this guy is close, you know, he's in competition with the other guys. So it's, you know, the AVBs the week beforehand are very important for them guys.
So we talked about Dublin against Mayo this weekend, and it's probably important for James to pick up a win against them. He obviously beat them in the 2012 All-Ireland semi-final, he would have been playing. But just, you mentioned in a 2017 interview that the toxicity of the rivalry at this point, and you said, to be honest, it's become almost toxic. The first game in 2015, I think that's where it went up a notch. Dublin went out that day with some challenges that were definitely red cards. You get the sense that the players don't like each other. That shines through, and it's spilling over now to the supporters. And this is coming from a guy who had his nose broken in a 2012 game as well. And you play up in Dublin, so you're familiar with both sides.
Yeah, I'm probably biased now in that quote. Yeah, look, when you're competing at that level, that the rivalry's there, you're talking, and Kerry and Dublin, like, there's kind of three teams in it that the rivalry's really there. It's Dublin, Kerry and Mayo, and the last 4 or 5 years, that's who's competing for the All-Irelands. And Kerry have that tradition down to the years, and they don't really like Dublin, you know, going for five in a row now, they certainly do not like that. Mayo, we're trying to bridge that gap since 51, and, you know, knowing the guys, they're absolutely so driven, and if you're losing out by a point or two in an All-Ireland final, you're not going to be exactly happy about it, and you're going to do everything in your control the next year after that to try and eradicate that. So it's just that competition. That rivalry is always going to be there when it's so close.
And on the field, is there a real needle? Did you feel that?
Real needle. Look, I suppose on Saturday now, the lads who are coming into the Mayo team, you know, the lads who are playing Croke Park for the first time, they'll notice that split second. It's going to be that split second faster. It's going to be, you're going to get hit that bit faster as well and harder. So it's all your stuff now on Saturday, your decision making, your skill sets, all going to come into focus, all going to be coming under that extreme pressure. So, yeah, on the pitch, look at, there'd be a bit of mountain, just the usual stuff. Like, so I suppose Dublin have been so successful the last 4 years that people just don't like to see it.
And you certainly don't like to see it. You're afraid of what to say here because you played the Dublin Championship.
Yeah. I can't exactly say too much here now, can I?
Let's talk about the, like, you told me before about in the 2012 All-Ireland semi-final, coming up to that, when you did beat Dublin. And this was a run, I think there was like 3 or 4 years in a row where you dethroned the All-Ireland champions. You did that to Cork, then you did it to Donegal and Dublin as well.
Yeah.
So for the freeze, in preparation for facing Hill 16 in the 2012 semi-final, you took, yourself and Killian Connor took some extra steps to be prepared for that, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I took Daniel Goulian, I remember, in 2010 when they played Down, I saw a quote in the paper, and he was saying that he took, a YouTube clip off the Dubs, off the Hill, basically...
Come on, your boys in blue.
Yeah, come on, your boys in blue. So I was thinking, and it is, look at it, it's a magnificent sight when you see the hill hopping, but obviously as a free taker, it can be daunting enough as well. And just when you're down on the pitch on your own, just had the earphones in, downloaded a track from Come On Your Boys in Blue, and started blaring in my ears, and it certainly helped on the day. Anything that could help, I would have done it.
So did it help you zone out, or you got used to it?
I just got used to it. Got used to the surroundings. As I said before, I was nearly singing along with them in the end. Like, do you know what I mean? So it was a bit surreal. Do you know what I mean? When you see the hill for the first time, it's a bit surreal when you see it for the first time. It's a good sight.
Okay, so do you get any kind of suggestion that Dublin, who've lost two of their first three games, any suggestion at all that they're going backwards or that they're losing any sort of a percentage point?
They can rebuild from Division 2, can't they? Imagine. No, look, I saw the Kerry game. They gave Galway a nice clipping. And they had two away games against Monaghan and Kerry, two top teams. They're only just back, probably, you know, they're only just back at the end of January. So absolutely, you know, it's, even if they lose on Saturday, we won't be panic stations. But it was nice to see Jim. It was the first time I saw Jim kind of make any excuses after the Kerry game. Now, again, they could have, if they took their chance at the end of that game, they wouldn't have won that game. So
with 14 men as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So what did Jim say that you enjoyed so much?
He he basically said that we're only just back a couple of weeks and we have a few guys come back from injuries. And it was the first time I've ever heard him even make any excuse.
Right, do you know what I mean? Okay, so you're sensing weakness there.
It's February.
How on earth can Dublin do without your club teammate, Dear McConnelly? Like, he is an exceptional player. They won the All-Ireland last year without him, fair enough. Do you see him coming back, first of all?
I have absolutely no idea, honest to God.
Will he not talk to you at all?
I tend not to talk to him about that stuff now, to be honest. Look, it's his own decision. Whatever makes himself happy. He's been there probably 10, 15 years at this stage. He has his, I don't know, probably 5, 6 All-Ireland medals. Actually, what is he? 2 club and 5 All-Ireland seniors.
Yeah.
He's probably enjoying life. And look, I'm sure the door is open. If he wants to return, he'd be able to do. But as of now, he was playing on Sunday against Skerries. He seems happy out, so I don't know.
Scored 4 points from play, I believe.
Scored 4 points from play, yeah.
Mercurial?
Yeah.
Was he playing the sort of stuff where you're like, this lad should definitely be on the inter-county stage?
Everyone's seen him operate now. Not much has changed. So, again, he's definitely up to that level. We'll put it like that.
Yeah. So, I was just going to ask you earlier on who's your favourite footballer of all time, and I think we've got an image coming up here now. I might have caught our producer on the hop a little bit with this. But who is your favourite footballer of all time? Who would be what you'd refer to as the GOAT, the greatest of all time?
Probably. From Mayo perspective, as growing up, Kieran McDonald would be kind of my idol.
Look at the goat.
I said Peter Canavan as well from an inside point, but Kieran, in terms of from a Mayo point of view, growing up, he was a bit different. Left footer himself, I'm a left footer. He was superb.
Who's a better footballer all around, Dear McConnelly or Kieran McDonald? Just in terms of style.
In terms of style.
After putting you on the spot.
You really are, aren't you?
Yeah.
The only thing I'm going to say in terms of Jamard's case is he's two-footed. He's two-sided. Kieran was very left-sided, but that wand, he had some wand.
He only needed the one.
Needed the one, is right.
When you reflect on your own Mayo career, do you look at it and look back fondly? Started a couple of All-Irelands, played well. You started one All-Ireland, did well, got a couple of scores, came on in another All-Ireland final. 2015, the quote you said was, Noel and Pat let me go after the Kerry game in 2015, and that was that. Mm. So how do you reflect on your Mayo career?
Yeah, look, you look back with fond memories. Obviously, I'm still in touch with a fair few of the lads and some of the backroom team as well. So it's not everyone gets a chance to play in an All-Ireland final. Obviously, look, it didn't go our way that day, but you have to look at it like a glass half full, not a half empty. So it was, in terms of the 6 years I had with Mayo, it's just phenomenal experiences coming out in Croke Park. Everyone says it, 82,000 people playing on the biggest stage of the year. It's just really, really fond memories. Mm. Just the training, the journey. The people talk about the journey and they're right, like, you know, 12, 13 to the league and the training camps away in Portugal. We were down in Achill 1 year, Belmurret. Just really good crack, like, away with the lads. Mm. So, yeah.
We're going to get out to the tactics board a little bit later on. You're going to show us about some good forward play. But just before we do that, Dublin Mayo this weekend, who do you think is going to win that? And do Mayo need it more?
Do Mayo need it more? Well, at this point, Dublin need it more, just for points. Look,
but in terms of winning an All-Ireland, do Mayo need to be able to say we can beat this Dublin outfit?
It's February, Shane. I get your point. Look, Mayo haven't beaten Dublin in 2012, and I know James will want that monkey off his back. Same as they'll be facing Galway, you know, in a couple of weeks' time. They haven't beaten them for 3 years. He'll want that monkey off his back. So this is why it's so interesting the media are picking up on it this Saturday, because Dublin need, if Mayo beat Dublin, Dublin can't get into a league final. So that's massive. And Mayo haven't been in a league final since, I'm going to say, 2012, I think we lost to Cork. So James will be gunning to get into the league final and try and win it. And blood the new players coming in. That's the most important thing. Try and get a squad, because I don't think we've had a squad the last 2 or 3 years. I think we've only had kind of 18 players that Stephen trusted. I think James will go the opposite of that. I think he'll try and get 25, 26 lads in there, and people will be fighting for their place, fighting for the jersey, and that breeds just, it's brilliant for the squad. Mm-hmm.
And we'll have all eyes on that game this weekend. A little while ago, I sat down with Off the Ball's Endicott and Shane Hannan, and we're going to look ahead to a couple of the games involving Ulster sides in this weekend's league. Tyrone against Monaghan. Tyrone basically have a point because Roscommon's Ulton Herney got a free at the end. There was dissent. The free was reversed, it was a throw ball, and Tyrone somehow got out with a draw. You're not impressed with Tyrone?
I haven't been impressed with Tyrone in the last couple of years. And I heard Owen Sheehan on here a few weeks ago defending Mickey Hart's reign. To be fair, Mickey Hart's done a great job over the last decade or so. Like, you can't really argue that, but...
Was it not the 5 years before that he did? Not the last
decade? Okay, 15 years then. Okay. 2 decades, you could nearly say it. Okay. If you want to be panicky about it.
I will.
But dynasties have to come to an end at some stage, and I think Tyrone's has been crumbling for the last couple of whiles. They haven't been getting the most out of the players that they have. They haven't been attacking as well as they have. They have some of the best attackers in the country. They've Hart in the half-back line. He's one of the best attacking half-backs in the country as well if he gets forward, but he's not allowed to get forward, and I think that's really keeping them back, and you're seeing it really come to the fore this year. Granted, Tyrone always starts slowly in the league. They're never really good. Mickey Hart doesn't really take the league properly seriously, but it's a worry for them if they don't stay in league in Division 1 this year. So that's probably going to be the danger this year, and if they go down to Division 2, then it's hard to see them really gaining any confidence going into the Ulster Championship then.
Monaghan this weekend.
Yeah.
Monaghan, one win from three. Is that a worry at this
I feel
stage?
Like when you started off with a Dublin win, it's probably a worry. If you felt that we'd be aiming for 4 points out of six from the opening three games, and you'd assume that the defeat would have been the Dubs.
But you were there for the Galway game.
Yeah, I've been at all three of Monaghan's games so far, and they've been getting gradually. The Galway game was
Galway game
from both fronts. But even looking at Tyrone, like, their league this campaign is actually mirroring last year in some ways. So last year they lost to Galway in their first game by 4. This year they lost to Kerry by 4. Last year they lost to Dublin in their second game by 5. This year they lost to Mayo by 6. In their third game last year, they beat Kildare Granted by a point. This year, they drew at Roscommon. So, in the end, last year, they finished fourth in the league. They got 8 points. So, as you said, they start slow. They tend to come good come the second half of the league. Now, last year in the league, it was a Saturday night game under lights in Castleblaney against Monaghan. Monaghan won by a point. This year, it's under lights on a Saturday night in Omagh. So, it should be a decent game on Saturday night. The Omagh factor probably won't come into it too much. Monaghan did beat them in Omagh last year in the championship. Rory Begg and Niall Morgan is an interesting one. The two fly keepers coming up against each other.
There could be a long range goal in this game.
Yeah.
A long range goal.
Because if the two teams do their job properly and they want to set up defensively, the logical thing to do is put pressure on Rory Began when he's carrying the ball out. So don't sit back and let him carry the ball out to the 45. Put pressure on him on the 21. Get the ball off him and stick the ball in the back of the net. Don't be afraid to have a shot. If the keeper's on the 45, shoot for goal.
So you're saying the same thing that happened to Manus Brannock for Ron Spidale?
Yeah.
I think the place kicking is going to be massive in this game. Like last year in the league under lights, I think Tyrone led by a point, Castleblaney at half time. Monaghan made a good start. Finn Kelly scored a few points from play, but Monaghan won by a point in the end, and that was largely due to Conor McManus came off the bench, hit a few frees. I mean, the place kicking from distance from Began and Morgan, and then the closer in frees from Peter Hart and Conor McManus will probably decide it, I reckon.
Let's call this one. Who's going to win this game?
I think Monaghan are going to win.
Yeah?
I'm going to go Monaghan.
It's going to be very tight, though. I expect it to be an absolutely atrocious game.
Actually, if Liam Kearns is to be believed, Donegal against Fermanagh could be atrocious as well. And not because of Donegal, because his quotes on Fermanagh a few weeks ago after Tipperary played them were, when you're playing a team that plays that way, it dictates that you have to play that way. It dictates how you're going to play the game. But I do think it's getting away from it, and I think hopefully it will continue to get away from it, because I don't think there's any entertainment value in it. So essentially he's talking about Fermanagh just sitting back and it just being horrible football. So yeah. Donegal against Fermanagh this weekend. 2 wins from 3 for Donegal, same for Fermanagh.
Well, whatever about entertainment value, it's more results based that I'd be worried about, because you always get the feeling with this Fermanagh team that they're limiting themselves to what they are at the minute. They had a good run in Division 2 last year, or Division 3, sorry, they got promoted into Division 2, and Roy Gallagher's doing a great job with them, but they're... I can't see them ever pushing out of Division 2, because they only score about 8 points a game. And you can't win anything by scoring 8 points a game. You saw they had a good run in Ulster Championship last year as well, and they got absolutely pummeled in the Ulster Final because they just sat back and didn't try and attack at all.
Is any of this to do with how Rory Gallagher sets his team up? So he was over your county, Donegal, yeah, before that. Do you think he got as much as anyone could have got out of him, or was he not the right man?
No, I think it's completely down to the way he sets up his team, because...
But you're saying he's getting as much as he can out of Fermanagh, but wasn't able to with Donegal.
But there is a limit to what you can achieve with that game plan. And you saw it with Donegal as well, because Donegal had a great bunch of players. Granted, Rory Gallagher might say they were in transition that year, but when they got to the Ulster against Tyrone, they sat back, and you saw what Tyrone did to them in the semi-final. And it does have a limit. You can't push on any further than what... I don't think Fermanagh can push any further on from what they're achieving right now with the game plan that they're using. I think there has to be an extra layer to that. They have to add an attacking layer to their defensiveness.
Shane, you see Orm McNeilish is after stepping away for what Declan Bonner says is until the end of the league. He hopes to have him back after that. So there was tragedy up in Gweedore. One of his friends, Mihal Rorty, was involved in it. Wants to take a little bit of time away. Mm. He is very crucial to the way that Donegal play in terms of being a link player.
Yeah, I mean, I was at the Ulster club final, Scotland against Gweedore. The importance of him, not just at a club level, but for Donegal as well, is massive. He's such a silky player, unbelievable to watch. He's kind of like a playmaker in that everything comes through him. Every attacking move seems to involve him at some point or other.
You'd be very comfortable with him carrying the ball all day if you were a manager.
He's the type of player you definitely want on your team and you don't want to be playing against. He's big, he's strong. He's kind of only come to the fore in the last couple of years.
Yeah,
really,
he broke into the team really young, and you always saw that he was this sort of mercurial player where he could kick a point from anywhere. And there's a running joke that Orm McNeilish doesn't score normal points. He only scores from outside the 45 or on the sideline or whatever. But he's added an extra layer to his game over the last year. He was Gador's main man in the club championship. And like Shane said, he's bulked up. He's strong on the ball. He no longer gets pushed off it. And I was saying to you off air there earlier that he has a bit of an air of a Rory Kavanagh about him, where he's really good at high fielding the ball. He'll be Donegal's main man in the middle of the field, carry the ball forward and be that link. So he is vital that he comes back for the championship.
He took out the 2017 season as well. And like I kind of mentioned to you that, and I know it's very different circumstances, but of course what's happened in Gweedore, and you'd sympathise with everyone up there because of that. But in some ways, the mercurial player stepping away for a season here and there, and I think Jamie Clark as well, but you do want him around every single season.
The pressure's on those players' shoulders to perform. Jamie Clark had the entire weight of Armagh on his shoulders, so he was thinking, right, look, need to leave this for a year. I mean, if the club games are more condensed, maybe there might be more of a desire to push on and play with the county now, but the fact that he's had to, you know, you have 3, 4, 5 weeks to prepare for one single club game, and then all of a sudden you lose an All-Ireland club semi-final, it's over. Yeah. And straight away you're expected to join back up with Declan Bonner's Donegal inter-county team, and the appetite cannot be there. Like, maybe in a few weeks he'll come back and say, look, he's got a sun holiday under his belt, relax a bit, take time off, and then come back with a bit more of an appetite. But right now, I can't see it.
I think it's easier for them to go away at that stage of their career as well, though, because, like, as important Orm McNeilish was to Donegal that year, he'll be even more important 4 or 5 years when he's older. And you see now where Jeremy Connolly has left the Dublin panel. He's a prime example. He went to Boston for a year, and everyone's thinking, when is he coming back to Dublin? Or is he ever coming back to Dublin? Will we ever see him in a Dublin jersey again? Whereas there was no doubt in anybody's mind that Orm McNeilish, you know what, he's a young lad, he's going to go away and experience something else in America, and he'll come back and he'll be a pivotal player for Donegal for the next 7, 8, 9 years.
You wonder, has Mark McHugh ever actually come back to be the same player that he was in 2012 after taking his year out?
I don't think so. He definitely missed out on an opportunity when he left. But the biggest problem for Mark McHugh was his brother Ryan McHugh coming into the team.
Yeah.
Who knew that he was going to become the player that he was? He sort of completely...
I would have thought you'd end up with one attacking from deep on one wing and the other on the other wing, but it hasn't quite worked out that way. Lads, just to get your predictions on this game, Donegal for Fermanagh?
I think Donegal win by 7 or 8 points.
Rory Gallagher's getting a lot of stick for the way they set up. Should be said, Rory Gallagher scored 3-9 in an Ulster Championship game against Monaghan in 2002, so he's not always been negative, but not Donegal by 3.
Okay, thanks, lads.
It's ready to come in for tomorrow, just chat about the
Couple of other games in Division 2 this weekend as well that we want to look at. We're after welcoming in Owen, Shane and Tommy Rooney. Lads, how are you doing?
Hey, good. Fellas, how are you?
Actually, just before we get to that, Donegal are after bringing on Stephen Rochford this year, and what do you think he'll add to them?
He's gone in as trainer. Look, he'll have learned a lot for the last 3 years with Mayo. Obviously very successful with Curfin and you know, he brought Mayo to two All-Ireland finals within a whisker of closing the deal. But he'll bring that experience. I'm sure he's learned a lot. Look at it from a personal point of view. I've never had a training session with him. So with that regard, I wouldn't know too much about Stephen in that regard.
Owen, an unusual one in the sense that he went from what I would see as a team higher up the rankings as the main man into being number two or whatever way you want to look at it with a weaker county.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the dynamic actually is, what exactly his responsibilities are as a coach within that team. I thought it was an excellent appointment when it first happened. You do wonder if it is, from a Donegal perspective, what are they looking at? Are they looking at perhaps coming up against Dublin last year in Croke Park and thinking they were a good bit off the mark, and they thought, well, Stephen Rochford is going to become available. He's come as close as anybody has over the last couple of years, perhaps taking them down. I do wonder if that's the sort of singular focus they're looking at, or perhaps they're just trying to develop a different style of play again, trying to move away from whatever they were trying to play 6-7 years ago at this point. Because I think after Jim McGuinness, did they kind of go even more defensive again under Gallagher? Certainly wasn't too much of a departure. And now under Bonner last year, there was sort of green shoots of
with
a
the
different
young
style of play
coming through.
Yeah,
with that style of play, I think the big thing, and we've all kind of we known it with Rochford, like he's not afraid to make decisions, whether it be, you know, off the field or in game. Like he's lived and died by them. Like
talking about Rob Henley, I'm talking about O'Shea.
And Alan Dillon, one that I referenced last week against Tyrone, where he started him and then whipped him off for Barry Moore. Like, he'll make calls where he can think he can impact the game in a certain way. And it's really great to see a manager acting like that on the sideline. Sometimes it doesn't work, but like, there's so many managers who are inactive during a game.
He's not afraid to put his reputation on the line with these decisions.
Yeah, he's not. And obviously, as you said, he got as close to anybody, you know, to beating Dublin. Like, you've got to be able to take chances. And like, we know what Jim McGuinness did to beat them, but Donegal, with the young lads that they have, maybe a little bit of extra brains from Rochford, you don't really know what Donegal are going to bring this year, because we missed Mike Bertie last year. We don't know what they were last year.
Well, let's talk about Kildare versus Clare. This is a fixture you wanted to look at. Two teams that have a win, a draw and a loss each, 3 points each. How do you see that game going this weekend?
Well, like, if you call anything in Division 2, you've got a very, very good chance of being wrong, first of all. So in terms of calling who's in the better position at the moment, who's trending upwards kind of on a more vertical level, it's definitely Clare. Clare have definitely started another bottom 3 points, but have started the league much better, in my opinion, in terms of where they should be as opposed to like where Kildare should be. And I think there is a bit of a warning sign, isn't there, from that Kildare from Adam match a couple of weeks ago. 8-6, I think, was the final score. Keane O'Neill saying after the game that they really just couldn't get a handle on the way that game was flowing at the time. There was just no way that they could stamp their own game plan on the game, which is a worry that I've had for Kildare for the last couple of years. They got dumped out of Leinster in very similar fashion last year in Tullamore, when Carlo just decided, we're going to play our way, doesn't matter what you're going to do, the game is going to be set by us. So if you're going to beat us, you're going to beat us playing our style of play. And Kildare weren't able to counteract that whatsoever. So I think they're almost better when they're up against better teams in a strange way. So I'm very worried about that from a Kildare perspective, from that Fermanagh match. That being said, like, it's very easy to be a little bit too harsh on Kildare given the absences of Daniel Flynn and Niall Kelly this year. Two huge...
Well, the whole game plan was probably based around Daniel Flynn. They've only one goal scored this year and Clare have scored five. So, like, how do you replace someone like Daniel Flynn, especially when you're so reliant on him?
It's very, very difficult. You know, he's one of the top forwards in the country. Just going to have to, other lads are going to have to step up. Again, that squad, Keane's going to have to develop two or three more new players and try and get them into the team. It's going to be very difficult. Like
it's like the bloody championship in England. I know we're saying that, but there's nothing. There's 4 metre and 4 points at the top. Cork are on 1 point at the bottom.
Leeds and Norwich in there as well.
Leeds and Norwich stuck in the middle. You don't know who's going to make the playoffs even. But like, even if you look at Kildare's first game against Armagh, Armagh looked to be the better team for most of that game. Took a Jimmy Hyland free in the last minute to get a draw. It's so hard to know what to make of them.
But it'll be interesting to see what the Michael Fennelly impact is as well. Like, when it comes to these sort of backroom coaches, you never really get a full sense until the year is kind of done, until you kind of maybe hear them speak a little bit more about it. Like, has he picked up where Jason McGahan left off? As I understand it, I think that was the like-for-like replacement, given Fennelly's background. So it's interesting to see, perhaps, if there is actually a different S&C programme that's just yet to come to fruition. Sometimes you just get a wrong read on what a team is like in the in the league.
Kildare have always naturally been athletic and big and good in that regard, though, in terms of S&C. It would be interesting to see what
they
change.
Sometimes they were, like, we had Mickey Burke on last week, and he was talking about how he got too big rather than mobile, and now he's trying to change back to being more mobile. So remember when Kildare a couple of times got embarrassed at Croke Park under Geezer? Was it Cork scored, put a big beat on them 1 year as well? And they were just these big, massive giants but couldn't move.
Yeah.
And is that something even in Mayo over the years that you had to address at any point?
Well, it's a skill-based sport. You should be out on the pitch more during the summer, definitely, more than you're in the gym. So you're talking, from your own experience, the winter is there to try and get that, we'll say...
Basis,
foundations in, get the body right, any niggles, get them right, maybe put on a half stone of muscle if you want. And then during the summer, you're gonna go back, revert, because you're doing so much running and you can't get into the gym as much. You're going to revert back to your normal weight. So that's, it's just maintaining. I don't know what Kildare's S&C approach was. So our Mayo's approach was basically two sessions a week.
Okay, I think they were just naturally big lads. Like, they liked the crib, and they had a lot of boys going to the AFL. They were naturally big anyway, so it probably kind of suited them to play like that a little bit.
And there was maybe three of them from Johnstown Bridge that went out there as well. Actually,
that was interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was for a junior club as well. I think they were at the time as well, which is interesting. Armagh against Tip is another Division 2 game that you had to look
at. Yeah, so I was having a look at that, and the quote that stood out from the last week is Liam Kearns saying it would be a serious achievement to win. He's obviously being a little bit facetious there, because as we were saying, there's nothing between them. I think the loss of Michael Quinlivan obviously is absolutely massive. It's stating the obvious for Tipperary, but I think with any of these Division 2 teams, when you're missing that marquee man, like, it's so important for these teams. Like, if Meath are missing, say, Mickey Newman, who's this year final in All-Cinders, if Armagh are missing Jamie Clark, like, they were against Meath. Like, I honestly think that if Jamie Clark is there, Armagh's comeback, where they got back to a point, they might have, you know, spurred on a little bit more. They probably could have held me off that day. Donegal are missing a number of players. Like, I don't think we're seeing the real Donegal yet. So, like, a serious achievement for Tip to win. I think Tip could easily win this game. Like, Armagh haven't won a game yet. Yet I think they're, like, started the year in January, the team that I was looking forward to seeing most this year is Armagh under McGeaney. I think they've got some serious young players coming through. Rian O'Neill, I don't know if you've seen much from play. Have you seen much of him yet?
Yeah.
Some of the standout moments last year, like, he's only 21. He's Oisin McConville's nephew. His brother Oisin's on the panel as well. Like, just thinking back to that Guidor game, I know he got sent off in it, but some of the points, like, it was all the GNL clips. Some of the points he scored that day, he's got 2 feet, he's got dummy, he's such a classy footballer. The type of footballer that Jamie Clark has needed alongside him over the last couple of years. Like, Andrew Murnan has been a big success in there in the full forward line. But now they've got Jared O'Burns. Like, that lad's playing the Sixth and Cup final tonight. And I know it's easy to say, throw back to the alpha, and, you know, look at the way he bounces the ball when he's running with a such direct running. But the way that lad goes for the ball, the way he attacks every kick out, there is a real kind of throwback element to him. So he's a classy footballer to keep an eye on as well. I actually really like this Armagh team. I like the way he has Forker in the half-back line and Mark Shields. They're kind of appearing all over the place. In midfield, he's got Niall Grimley and Sheridan, who are big mobile lads. They bet Tip last year in the Championship. So, like...
Stolen at the... Oh, sorry, Max mixing up with a league game.
I remember Clark's goal where he kind of dummied... Oh, was it last year or the year before where he dummied the keeper?
Before,
it was the year before where he dummied the keeper. But, like, I can't really give you a prediction because it's impossible to tell you what's going to happen in the game. But it'll be interesting because I do think Armagh are interesting to watch this year. If they squeaked in to the Super 8s as that 8 team, you might see them jumping on and off a lot if McGeaney to stay on, because they do have young lads coming through. Mm-hmm.
It's his fifth year as well at this point, and they haven't won an Ulster Championship game. Can you see that happening at this point?
Not this year, no, unless they seriously...
And that's even a Championship game in Ulster, never mind the title.
Division 2, like, in the league for Division 2, it's nearly more important than the Championship now at this point, because you'll see now, if Mayo came down from last year into Division 2, like, you're talking, it's a year lost. Division 2 teams, what are they aiming for? They're aiming to get up into Division 1 and to get the young lads blooded in an environment that's going to, be like the Championship, basically.
I've kind of wondered that a little bit over the last couple of years. Meath have kind of been close to moving on a little bit, but never really have. Like, they've kind of finished third in Division 2 without setting the place alight. They've been close to promotion.
Yeah.
And I've always thought to myself, geez, if we got to Division 1 next year, like, is it going to be like Westmeath a couple of years ago where they lost 8 games in a row and then they had a really bad 18 months? Or, like, if I take it back to club football, in my own club, when we managed to get into play the league football in Division 2, like, we hadn't won a championship in 35 years. Mm. I know for a fact that playing Division 2 league football that year, we got hammered out to get in so many games, but we learned so much.
Yeah.
As a team, we were getting beaten in games, but it wasn't like, you know, you might have been playing a Division 4 team and you might have made the same mistakes and got away with a 1-point win and you kind of gloss over it. Like, in Division 1, in intercounty football, can you apply the same to Cavan or Roscommon, or do you want to get that flow in Division 2?
Well, in Division 1, it's you're put under more pressure. It's that split second in terms of your skill set. It's under more pressure. Your decision making is under more pressure. So in Division 2, it's just slightly a slower pace. And that's, you know, it's so important to get up into Division 1. All the top teams say it, play that style of football from February to, what is it now, April, is it? It's such a good run into Championship, get the team prepared right. And when you're blooding lads, you trust them more because they're coming up against the top teams.
Mm. So Tipperary are currently fifth, and Armagh are currently second last in Division 2 as well. We had the table up there.
There's only two points between...
Yeah,
Armagh and Meath, they were top of the table.
So that was from GA League Tables on Twitter. We're going to move on to the debate now. I'm sure everyone's familiar with it at this stage. It's caused consternation the past couple of weeks. Tommy? Yeah.
You boys have... So you had Brogan and Gooch last week.
Yeah.
And week one was Mickey Hart as Tyrone manager. And this week, Shane, the topic is, where should Michael Murphy be playing for Donegal? And I think you're going to kick us off. I think it's 0-2-0 so far in the last two debates.
No, Ger Gilroy clearly said I was winner in the Brogan versus Gooch. I said Brogan ahead of Gooch. Enda, come on.
Don't put me on the spot. Okay, we're kicking off with Murphy here. Where should Michael Murphy be playing his football for Donegal?
Is it football, full forward or not? I'm saying yes, football, he should play full forward. And you're saying no, not full forward. So, Tommy, tell me when to take it away.
Clock is gone, Shane.
When Donegal won the All-Ireland in 2012, he scored that goal from being inside at the 14, as Enda might well remember. When Glenswilly won their first county title with him in the team in 2011, where was he playing? Full forward. You think of the 2014 All-Ireland semi-final against Dublin, when Donegal shocked the Dubs. The damage was done when he went inside. Mayo against Donegal in 2015, he got 0-3 from play. Brilliant scores from midfield. You feed him and he will score. And that's why it's crucial that Oran McNeilish comes back this year as well, once he's had a bit of a break, because he can feed that ball in nicely. He's easier to mark out the field. Just think of Justin McMahon not even facing the ball and just standing in his face all day like that. The 2014 All-Ireland football final against Kerry that Donegal lost, I remember having to do a piece for The Star that day looking at the star, Kieran Donaghy, and Murphy, the two number 14s. Aidan O'Mahony was man-marking Murphy out in the middle of the field.
10 seconds.
And Aidan O'Mahony actually touched the ball more than Murphy as well. If the mark comes in, he's the best fielder in the country. And if I'm an opposition manager, the one place I want Murphy is on his own 45.
On the buzzer. Good going. Off you go.
I'm actually sick of listening to that crap every single week. Like, some of the stuff you say there. Like, I got slaughtered for going if, buts and maybes last week. The amount of ifs in that, if Oran McNeilish comes back. Like, that's an absolute nonsense thing to say. First of all, you stabbed your own argument in the back there, I think. So, two things about this, about Michael Murphy. Just, like, to wake up what you're actually talking about here. First of all, he is the best player in that Donegal team. I don't think there's any question about that. And also, let's realise that the mega impact of the full forward in Gaelic football is over. I would love for it to still be around. I would love it more than anything, Shane. But it's not.
Footballer and like,
don't take, shut up. Don't take, like, it's my time to talk here. And don't take it from me. I'm going to actually stop talking here for a moment, because I'm going to let Niall Moyna take it away. He's a former coach of Michael Murphy's, and he says the way football is being played now, those brilliant inside forwards are being negated. It'd be ridiculous to leave Michael Murphy up there with four men around him. That's Professor Niall Moyna, the fellow who's got a PhD. I think he's better qualified than either of us to actually speak on this topic. And Greg Sigerson's. He's got all the qualifications in the bank, and he says Michael Murphy should not be
a forward.
DCU. And
all right.
So, like, when you talk about the way the events have gone, they're certainly trending in my favour here. Like, Oran McNeilish currently on the way out. We don't know if he's going to come back. Paddy Brack-Beerty's on the way back. You talk about great Donegal teams. Look at their midfield in 2012. It's far better than the midfield they have now. They actually don't have that. Like, Michael Murphy is needed in a more central position for Donegal.
All right. Like, there's all right. Good points. Good points on both sides. Shane, you lost points from reading off the sheet there. Owen definitely has the debating skills up again this week.
But this is nonsense.
I'm only joking. And I'd like to get your take on it. Where you'd like to see Murphy play if you're playing with him, if you're a Donegal man, and how you think he's been playing over the last couple of years.
With the mark that's in at the moment, if that keeps up.
But it won't. Obviously, this year's championship.
Well, you wished.
But, like, it's just a fact.
Is that a fact? Is it?
Yeah. Sure, we won't have it for this
year's
championship.
It can't be in this year. It can only be brought into next year's championship, yeah.
Yeah, well, in that case, if you put Murphy inside, obviously that's going to bring a sweeper back. So bringing a sweeper back, that's going to, you're going to have an extra guy out the field. So with having Murphy inside, you can run the ball a bit more. But also, I know the Donegal point of view, where they want to get Murphy on the ball as much as he can, and his skill set is so good that you need him involved in the game. So both arguments are valid.
Yeah. That really is the case.
But like, there's certainly like, one argument that's more valid here.
I don't know, but like the minor point, right?
I'd be on your side.
With the mark, I call you. If the mark is there.
Like Shane, I'd be on your side.
I know. Another riff and it's not, so.
But if Stephen Rochford is involved with Donegal, he's probably going to end up full back.
Well, like, fair enough. You say full forward. Would he be a better full forward than a full back? I'll give you that. He's a better full forward than he is a full back. But that is the only thing.
The thing is, right, and we all know it, and Moina, you quoted Moina there, the way Gaelic football is now, like, why can't you play Michael Murphy inside in the full forward line for 25 minutes and then let him out and do his roving role?
He's a panic button.
I think that's the way to do it. He's not a panic button full forward, and you're losing the debate for that. He is a sensational full forward. Absolutely phenomenal.
But in terms of Donegal context,
I don't think so. I think
he's our best player.
How many game plans can you have in a game? Like, you don't have to have just one game plan. You don't even have to have a B. You can have A, B, and C that you're going to throughout a game.
Yeah.
Like, Michael Murphy, I think, should be playing 30% of a game inside in the full forward line, picking his moments to go in. Loud midfielder Paddy Keenan, phenomenal footballer. I came up against him once in a challenge game, and I was like, where the hell has he gone? He would ghost into the full forward line out of nowhere, and that's where he got all his scores from. He was playing around midfield, and next thing he'd disappear. He'd make a call, I'm not following my man for the next minute, and he'd appear in corner forward and he'd get 1-2 in nowhere luck. So, like, putting Murphy, put whatever number you want in the back, put 3 in his back if you want, and let him play wherever he wants.
So wait, sorry, you're saying 40 minutes not full forward, 30 minutes full forward, but yet you're saying Shane wins the debate.
Shane wins the debate.
But your debating skills are very poor. That's the problem here.
Well, like, I can debate you about my debating skills if you want as well.
You lost if I say Murphy's a panic full forward for Donegal.
It's not what you know, it's what you can prove.
But you're just after saying that you would play him in the full forward line less than he would not in the full forward line.
He's probably more effective inside than outside. As in, when he's outside, is he really having an effect on the game?
Actually, I was at the meet Donegal.
You think he has no effect whatsoever when he's not playing?
I think it's very muted effect when he's standing on his own 45 just running around tackling.
He's such an honest player, he'll go back to his own 45 and tackle.
I disagree with that one. I was in the middle of the pitch for Park Talton, Meade playing Donegal 2 years ago, and Meade should have beaten Donegal that day. And the difference was, now Paddy McBurtie scored 2 late points, Michael Murphy was playing that deep quarterback role, and he's such a big man, such a unit. He was the man who broke the line 5 or 6 times and laid it off. And he's like coming from deep. Like, we know how important runners are in Gaelic football. Murphy has an option coming off the shoulders, a bit more space, breaking the line. Like, he is a phenomenal option everywhere. He's unbelievable.
So call it then, lads. Who won the debate? We're moving on.
You're getting personal about my panic button.
Shane won the debate this week, but I still think it's 2-1. Owen won the last two. I don't agree with
Gaelic. Jared,
but like, that's a complete cop out as well. You're saying he won and I won last week. Like, pick a
Shane side. Won this week. 100%. Okay. That's my
clearly.
Really.
Lads, we move on to the club stuff. I think we're going to have the dream final in the All-Ireland Club Final on Paddy's Day, because Cara Finn beat Gidore, Dr. Crokes beat Molniocta. So it is the two heavy hitters meeting in the final as well. And for Dr. Crokes to do, despite Johnny Buckley getting red carded after the 19th minute, and they were down by 3 points as well. As a Kerry man, you must have been impressed.
Yeah, but like, just for the record here, like, people in Kerry tend to hate Dr. Crokes.
Do you hate them?
Not particularly, but like, I don't think anybody is actually.
Why?
Just because, like,
big
towny club. I think most people in Killarney actually just hate them, just inter-town rivalry.
There's two clubs in Killarney, isn't there?
Yeah, well, like, Legion would hate them in particular.
Okay.
Such a slur, isn't it? Towny club.
What a Legion, so. A Legion, not a towny club.
They're also a towny club. But Dr. Crokes could be seen as more towny than Legion. Legion are about a 6 out of 10 on the towny scale. Crokes are a solid 9.
You can never beat those under 14 team talks. Come on, lads. You know we can get at them.
the Buckley sending off, like, I know Kevin Cassidy was joking about it on Twitter, saying right, ourselves against Molniocta for a third place playoff. I'd actually love to see that game happen, just to see what the difference in quality is between Gwydor and Molniocta.
Is Kevin Cassidy on Twitter this week?
There was something that happened on Twitter.
We have a tweet coming up from David Brady here in a second as well. He had a couple of choice words and David Cassidy responded to him. But first off, who'd been in a fight between Cassidy and Brady? And
I go with Cassidy for the crack.
Yeah. Do you think David Brady was winding people up, or do you think he meant what he was saying? And we'll have the tweet.
I would say he is laughing at home now, to be honest. Yeah, he'd be winding people up. Maybe, look, he probably believes it to a certain extent himself.
There's the tweet now. They will, when the dust settles and time passes in a quiet moment, ask, did they pass up the opportunity of a lifetime? He's talking about Guido. Was there anything they could have done more? Posting multiple piss-ups won't win you All-Irelands, and that's not what winning is about. Referencing some of those videos that Neil McGee and Cassidy had after winning the Ulster title as well.
We've DB in tomorrow morning. I think the start of that tweet is a little bit like kind of some TV series and the narrator kind of talking over it and kind of bringing it in. Like, we all know the reaction to that tweet, the 450 replies. Like, David, I don't know whether he has a nugget of a point somewhere to do with a general culture. I don't really know if he does. He probably picked the wrong club and the wrong time to do it. He was always going to get that response. We have him in tomorrow morning at OTB AM, or Friday morning at OTB AM, so we'll get his verdict on it. He's held his silence to then, but I don't know, like...
I think it's pointless. It's much, people say, oh, doing an interview. But like, if you do an interview before a big game, oh, you're giving the edge to your team. What are you talking about? It's not going to kick the ball over the bar.
Like, I'll say one thing. If I was Kevin Cassidy's teammate and he had that phone on my face after winning a game for 3 days in a row, I'd be breaking the phone and putting it in the back.
I know. Like, would it bother you, Andy?
The only thing, it doesn't bother me, when they won the Ulster Championship in early December, like, you know, the few videos they put up, fair enough.
Hilarious.
It's grand. Like, I've no issue with that. The only issue I would have is, as a team, I think Kevin put up a tweet off the picture of his bag before the game, the morning off the game. I'm just like, is there any real need? There's usually a kind of social media ban. If I was his teammate, I wouldn't be exactly that happy about that. But the rest of it is just harmless stuff.
Hmm. Remember last year, the Club All-Ireland Final, before we were playing the Pearcy again, I was there tweeting about soccer up until an hour or two before the All-Ireland Final, and I had people saying, do you not have some sort of a media ban here or something like that? I didn't care. But we had Eamon McGee on OTB AM earlier in the week, and here's what he had to say about it.
We should talk briefly about the fallout from David Brady's tweet as well. Obviously, Kevin Cassidy got back, and that turned it into a very big story. I'm going to read for people who are just listening to this. They will, when the dust settles and time passes, in a quiet moment ask, did they pass up the opportunity of a lifetime? Was there anything they could have done extra? Posting multiple piss-ups won't win you in All-Ireland, and that's not winning. That's not what winning is about. That was the tweet in the aftermath of the game, around about 8:20 on Saturday evening. Today, in your piece in The Star, you're upset really about the fact that it wasn't the drinking after the games that cost you the game against Carfin. It was Carfin's greatness.
Yeah, you know, as I learned on Brian Cox on Saturday, that the universe is finite, and we're talking about a David Brady tweet for 2 days here, going into day three. There's just no need for it. Like, when Brady sits down and when he thinks hard about it, he's going to realise that it wasn't, that there was no logic to his point at all. He doesn't know how hard we've trained. He doesn't know the preparation, the video work we put in. You know, Kevin Cass would have been posting multiple videos the time we won the Ulster. He was possibly Edo's best player on Saturday. Didn't affect his performance. You know, I just don't see the logic in his point here.
Eamon clearly not happy with that. I'd be in the same boat if I was him. We have a couple of messages in. Niall McCauley on Twitter: Mickey Hart famously fields his strongest possible team in every game Tyrone plays, even McKenna Cup, so the notion that he doesn't care about the league is stupid. Cameron Diamond on YouTube, him being your club mate with St Vincent's, Enda, what do you make of the Mayo forward line this year, especially with some of the younger new lads coming in? We'll get to that up with the tactics board in just a minute. Actually, we'll play a quick video. The Electric Ireland Sigerson Cup final is on this evening, and that's between UCC and St Mary's. We're going to look at a couple of goals from Sean O'Shea, but we might do that a little later. First of all, Mullinocta captain Shane Mulligan spoke it after the ball after his side's loss to Dr Crokes at the weekend, so we'll have a look at that and come back with the tactics board.
Look, it panned out the way it panned out. We kind of have no qualms about the result. It's disappointing that the journey ends here, but it's been a great journey. When you come up about against the Kerry champion, a team of that quality, some of the shot selection was brilliant. You know, a lot of the scores they took was really good. The wide count was probably in the region 4 or 5. They bring on Owen Brosnan, they bring on Colm Cooper, quality side. So we can have no qualms about the way it ended up. Disappointed, but you know, I think we stuck in the game well. Middle of the second half, we were back down to 7 points. You know, but we pulled it back. Just needed to bounce. the bounce of the ball and the rub of the green to go with you, and I guess it just didn't go with it this evening, you know. He hadn't got a flick there, the keeper gets to it. You know, you need all those to nestle in the back of the net just to keep you in the game so that you can, you know, be in the mix at the end of the game. But very proud of the lads and the way they hung in there and they performed right up to the end. So disappointed for everyone that the journey ends here, and it's not to be in Croke Park.
If that third goal had gone in with 15 minutes to go, it puts a very different complexion on the scoreline. That would have been a big lift for you.
Yeah, look, that was it. We went in 2 points down, relatively happy, you know. We're still in the mix. That's where you want to be. You're with a team at that quality. And then you just need everything to go for you when you're playing against a side like that, because, you know, every time they get down, you know, they've the quality and class to hurt you, you know, to get scored. So we needed, when we went down the other side, you know, Jason got a ball in across the top, you know, was it a penalty or wasn't, you know, but you need all those, whether it is or not, you kind of need it to be called for you, and you need that flick to go in and all that. So they didn't go for us, but like that, you know, you get them scores, you know, it gives you the impetus to go on and things like that, and it puts more pressure on them. But they didn't come off for us today, and they got the scores the other end. So look, we're disappointed that the journey finished here this evening, but very proud of the lads, and you know, the performance was relatively good, and we stuck at it right till the final whistle, and that was the important thing.
Yeah, Molineochta have been one of the fairy tales of the past season, but their season is over now. Carfin against Dr. Crokes coming up. We've come up to the tactics board here because we want to get Enda to show us what good forward play is about these days, especially good modern forward play. You're still playing with St. Vincent's at pretty much the highest level as well. So can you tell us, as a forward yourself, now this is the traditional 15, the way it's set out, how are the best forward lines operating?
Most county teams now usually set up with two inside. This guy, third man, comes out to the top of the D most likely, or even joins the centre forward out here. The two wing forwards usually, like, it's a torturous role. They up and down all the time. They're like midfielders now at this stage, in terms of creating that link from defence into attack. And then you've got your four. This is usually the setup now. You've got your four forwards.
So it's like a box almost there.
Yeah, look, you can. Yeah, it's like, they're interchangeable, like, but it is like a box. So these two guys, you want to be going laterally across the line. You don't want to be, what you call it, coming towards the ball. Like, the key principles, what we've been taught is, you want to be going towards the sideline. You want to try and receive the ball going towards goal, and you want to be trying to make your run across the line. So if you're getting that ball facing the line, it's not a very
so the last thing you want is to get the ball, you're running out towards the sideline, you don't want to be receiving the ball and you're carrying it towards the sideline, because you're running into, you're no threat then.
Yeah, look, a good example of receiving the ball on the half turn was I think it was the Dublin Kerry game this year in the league. It was I'm not too sure, was it Dean Rock or Cormac Costello got the ball into Paul Mannion, and literally he put it in from here. It's about a 30-yard ball, and Mannion received it on the half turn facing his own goal, and he got the goal out of it. And you could actually see the panic on the Kerry's cornerback's face.
They were kind of one on one at that stage.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, one on one. But the key word was the kick pass into Mannion. He, you know, it was a perfect flight of ball. Mannion facing his own goal on the half turn, and he just literally ran in 20 yards and buried in the bottom corner. So it was very, very good goal.
Bernard Brogan has spoken over the years about how he has to stay close to goal, and that you have to be very disciplined and patient. So, I mean, you told me earlier when we were looking at this that patience is a word that can, it's nonsense as well. Sometimes you hear people say, be patient in there. When is it nonsense and when does it make sense, like in Bernard Brogan's case?
It's the only line, really, you're relying on your teammates. If you're you can get very frustrated inside if you're losing the midfield battle, or if the ball isn't, if it's coming in, and if it's a mistimed ball, or if it's not directed right into you. And I guess, you know, a good full forward, usually the touches you're going to get is between 10 and 15 touches a game. That's not a lot. So whatever you do with them touches defines your game. So you're relying on the ball that's coming into you. You're relying on an awful lot of your teammates to get that ball into you. So it's patience, yes, but I suppose Bernard at that stage in his career, he was going to be given the benefit of the doubt, as in he was a couple of All-Stars at that stage, I'm sure, and he was the final man to get that ball, basically. So he'd have the two guys out here receiving the ball, linking up that play, and Bernard is deadly from literally left or right foot. He developed his left side very well, receiving the ball on the loop, and he's slotting it. You've seen so many goals and points, Bernard looping around and slotting it over the bar. And even the two goals he got against us in the 2013 All-Ireland final. He was literally, he's a very good poacher. There's one, literally a ball, a speculative ball coming into the square, and he fisted it in, and then he waited. Basti came right through the centre of our defence, and Bernard just literally waited, and he just, it was a 2-on-1, and he just panned it into the net.
Tommy, did you want to say something?
Yeah, just so that formation there with the four up top and, you know, the wing fours dropping, there's obviously a load of variations on it. So, like, the way even you had the fours set up as a square there, you can do a diamond, you can do a straight line.
Yeah, the nut as well. The nut is a popular.
The nut as well,
Did you ever call the nut? Literally, everyone, that was popular for a few years as well. Yeah.
And what was the idea in terms of the ball being played in then to exploit the nut?
Yeah, just... Just basically, you have so much space, like, so much space. And there'd be a basketball player there as well.
Screening
players, and basically so much space each side, you're running into that space.
My question is kind of, so the flip side of that is that the other team are going to have bodies back.
Yeah.
So, like, you're the four up front. As you said, you're aligned on your teammates, you're aligned on delivery, the manner in which you get the ball in. How best as a four, or whether it's two inside or whatever it is, how best can you negate, I'm not even going to say sweeper, but the extra bodies that are back there looking after you, how best can you take them out of the game, or what way are you going to try and get a little bit of space?
So you're saying, usually we say the Blues are the defenders here and you have your four up top, and you usually have a plus one here at the back, all right? So basically, the corner forward will have to sacrifice his game, all right? One of the corner forwards, if you're seeing the ball coming up this line here, coming up this side here, all right, we'll say the Reds are attacking. So you're seeing the ball coming up this side here. So this guy has to make that selfless run out towards the sideline. It's not the right run, but hopefully you're bringing the two lads with you, and it's leaving one on one inside. It's just a dummy run, and it's just leaving the other guy inside.
Yeah, I've been kind of thrown in the full forward in the last couple of years, and all you hear it a lot. You have to make a number of runs before you get that ball. And it's sometimes I think it's a bit of a cliche, but it's about making smart runs as well. Like, when you were playing inside...
Well, we were discussing this off air. Like, it depends on the skill set of that guy who's on the ball. So you're training with that guy, and the more contact you have with the lads on the training pitch, the better, because you get to know their strengths and weaknesses. So the guy on the ball may not have that in a skill set to drill in a 30-40 yard ball into you. So you're going to wait. Obviously, as a young lad, and as you get older, you realise this, and you obviously have the patience, like Bernard said, but as a young lad, you're zipping around the place as a 21-year-old lad. Like, so as you get older, you have to have that patience.
There's a perfect example, last one, you'll learn a lot from him. He came back from a broken leg and he's been a completely different player, Andy Moran, over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
What would you say the biggest thing from playing alongside Andy and watching him is in terms of his own movement?
His lateral runs, he's constantly moving. He is, if you watch...
Shows on the board here, too.
If you have Andy, like, let's say, Andy is literally, I mean, if you watch Andy on Saturday night, if you have a player cam on him, like, he's literally going across the line, he's trying to trip his man up. He's, you know, he'll have a nice little, I don't know, it's Mick Fitzsimons on him now, but them two usually have a great battle. In the 17 All-Ireland final, watching them, the two of them go at it, like, it was really, really good battle. But Andy's literally, it's just his movement off the ball is just so, so good. And even there was a play against Cavan, actually. So literally, he was isolated inside, and we say Cavan, obviously in blue here, and the ball, but Mayo were coming right through the middle, and Andy basically, the Cavan lad had him really, really well covered, and basically Andy literally went this way, went back, and then at the split second he came back, he was pointing, as he was going back this way, he was pointing the other way. So literally the ball came into him and he just fisted over the bear. Just he goes his runs, two or three runs at a time, to get away from his man, and his main strength is winning ball.
That player cam is a bloody great idea, because you really don't get it unless you're watching him live. Like, it looks like he's making it so simple, but he's doing so much off the ball.
He's doing a phenomenal amount of work off the ball to get on. And again, as I said, like, that 15 touches for an inside guy is a very, very, very good game. The midfielders you're talking now could be anywhere between 30, because it's gone so defensive, it could be even 40, 50 possessions now at this stage. The middle third guys, you're talking midfielders, wing forwards, centre forwards, but the inside guys is still only at 15 touches, and that's a very, very good game.
Who are the best inside forwards, do you reckon, in the game right now? Conor McManus, surely up there.
Conor McManus,
Well, Dean Rock, you wouldn't say he's necessarily closest to goal type guy as well. Actually, you were saying he's a small bit further out.
No, like the Dublin are very good at, we'll say, having patience and we'll say going around from this side to the other side and keeping the width and creating these channels up along the D basically, and they leave that D open a lot of the time so they can run into it and run out of it again, and they're always moving. You don't see any Dubs, we'll say, if the ball comes in this side deep, they'll bring it around, and you see the other guys, the likes of McCaffrey, the likes of Fenton, whoever's on the other side, they're having the patience because they've discussed it in their team meetings that, right, this is the pattern play, the ball is going to be recycled around, we're going to keep our width and we're going to create that channel up the other side.
Monaghan do that an awful lot as well, and they have done over the last couple of years.
But I think Dublin are probably the best at it at the moment.
So this is what they're doing, they get the ball here, bring it around and wait. Bring it along the line until somebody has a gap to go through.
They see a mismatch or they see 2-on-1 basically, and they'll run it then, and then they'll basically, and they're very good at doing the basketball play of screening the other guy. If I give it off to, we say, if someone's looping around me and I'm going straight towards goal, someone's looping around me here, I give it off and I'm creating that screen then for this guy, and I'm not doing anything, and he'll take a score then.
So who is that best inside forward in the game right now?
You'd have to say Conor McManus. He's phenomenal. He really is. And the attention he gets, against, I think it was a couple of years ago, they were playing Dublin in Croker, and he brought the two, I don't know what two Dublin defenders were on him, but he absolutely brought them to the cleaners.
I think he gave Davy Byrne 11 points that day.
It was absolutely outrageous.
Davy Byrne from Olaf's, was he one of the backs?
There was two of them following him.
There was two of them following him, and he literally... 11 points in an intercounty senior game is just a phenomenal goal, especially two people on him.
I know, that's the thing as well about the marquee forward. Like when you have the likes of a Jamie Clark back, like or a Conor McManus, they're going to tie up that best defender. And with Monaghan, they need to have a couple of options this year, which they might have with McManus.
We might look at a couple of those scores from Sean O'Shea. We mentioned that he got a couple of goals in the Electric Ireland Sigerson Cup this week. So as we sit down, we'll just have a look at a couple of those goals. And I want to ask you about Kerry as well, and as well, just before we finish up, because Donny Buckley this year is after, he's back with Kerry as well. You've worked
nice
with him
side
before.
Step here, Moshe.
Can you tell us the impact that Donny Buckley might have this year?
You could see Kerry's tackling against Dublin. It was absolutely ferocious in the league. He loves his tackle. He'll break it down. I would suggest that Kerry, all they've done now in the last couple of months is getting their tackle right, because it's such an important aspect of their game. His knowledge, he is. Like, he'd have cameras everywhere. Yeah, I swear to God, in Croker, he'd have a camera at the back of the goal, up in the Hogan stand, upper tier, looking straight down the pitch, and he can break down the movements of guys and what their tendencies are and their patterns of play and, you know, what guys are doing, basically.
What's the thing about the tackle? Like, why is it so good?
Why is it so good? I suppose you do it so much. The small side of games we'd have, he'd break it down in terms of, I know Arsenal have a drill that it's, you know, I know soccer is obviously different, but it's your feet work is so important to break down the tackle. So they have their two hands behind their back, and it's literally mimicking what the guy is when he's coming towards and mimicking what he's doing, getting your feet work right. And that's all, like when someone's coming at you at full belt, it's your feet. Like you have to get your feet set.
So you're nearly trying to force them out really more.
If someone's trying to sidestep you at full pelt and your feet's all over the shop, it's your mechanics. Like and that he does that quite well.
Just before we finish, we've spoken already about the GOAT for you, which is Kieran MacDonald as well. We're going to start a weekly segment, which is GOAT of the Week, the greatest of all time of the week. And I think it would have to be after the All-Ireland Club semi-final at the weekend. He scored 1-8 for Cara Finn. I think it has to be Gary Sice. I'm sure we've an image coming up of him there, looking in there in full floor against Guido. So Gary Sice is the GOAT of the week.
This segment might take off, Shane.
I think so. That's my Photoshop work now. That took me, I'd say, about 10 seconds. Yeah, it looks every bit of a goal. Just one final question before we finish. Dublin for the All-Ireland this year, or do you think Dublin or Mayo, Kerry or anyone else can interrupt their flow?
Oh, geez, I'd like to think so. Yeah. Look, it's between the three of them, obviously. Mayo probably have a bit more to come, but Kerry and Mayo are coming, and that's why this weekend it'll be so interesting. Mayo on top of the league, that's a beautiful sight, isn't it? Look, the four games to come now with Kerry, Galway, Monaghan and Dublin, like they're the four teams that you want to be looking at to kind of build towards the summer, especially James be looking at that Dublin and Galway game especially, because we haven't beaten Dublin since 12 and been Galway for 3 years as well. So we've, you know, he won't be looking past Connacht. He'll definitely want to be winning Connacht this year, set his stall out. And Galway, he, you know, the Mayo people do not like Galway beating us the last 3 years, I can tell you that. So he'll be really setting a stall out there.
This weekend, right, obviously comfort and goals, and I think one of the things that have brought Mayo as close to Dublin as they have come, which is as close as anything can be, has been the way they press kickouts. And like, they are regarded within inter-county football as being the best at doing that. I think this weekend with Comerford, there's an element that if Mayo can get that right,
is Comerford definitely a goal?
Is that
it's looking that way. He has been there so far, so okay, we'll have to wait till the team's announced. You never know what you'll get.
It's
worth keeping an eye on that.
It is worth keeping an eye on that, yeah. It'll be.
Did you ever find that you got into Cluxon's head when you were pressing kickouts?
I think the only time we seemed to rattle him was probably in the 17 All-Ireland, the first half. We really did. I know Sherlock came in, I think, during that half, and he said to go short. Like, Mayo had the three towers out the middle. We had Ado, Shamey and Tom Parsons, and Dublin couldn't do anything with them, and we were winning a serious amount of primary possession. And that's why, obviously, if you're winning primary possession off the opposition kick-out, like, then you're bearing straight down on goal, and so important. And Dublin, that's their foundation. They get their kick-off out, and, you know, they get it, obviously, and they build from there.
OK, that's it for the Gaelic Football Show this week. We'll be back again next Wednesday at 12:30. We'll have the Hurling Show tomorrow at 3 p.m. on all the online channels, YouTube, Twitter and Facebook. We'll see you then.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.